Mr. Oxley, reel 6.
Now, we've been talking so far about food in the front line. Did the situation as regards food vary in the reserve and support lines?
No, that was identical. That was all the rations all stemmed from a routine ration. Never varied from one day to another. In the main, it was bully beef and bread and margarine.
What about when you were out of the line? What were the eating arrangements then?
Then, if we were out of the line at so-called rest, then we had a better, what should we say, distribution of food, inasmuch you had your travelling field kitchens and you had hot soup and hot tea and that kind of thing.
From the field kitchens, what else would you get apart from tea and soup?
Yes, well, we'd have a mixture of a kind of, as one would know it today, a porridge. And that was made up of the ground bully beef, biscuits, the army issue of biscuits, army biscuits.
What about stews?
That what?
Stews.
Shoes?
Stews.
Oh, stews. Well, they would be made up of bully beef again.
Were they common?
Oh, yes. When one was out at rest, the meals were quite good, actually. They were always hot from the field kitchens.
What kind of soup was it, as a matter of interest?
In the main, it never varied. The stock in trade, as it were, was the bully beef. You either had it from straight from the tin, or the company cook or the battalion cook, as the case may be, would make a kind of a stew from it. In the main, it was the bully beef, was the mainstay of the forces.
Yeah.
Coupled with the conic occasionally.
Did you get an adequate supply of vegetables?
No. Vegetables. I can't remember having a vegetable actually at all.
Either in or out of the line?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm emphatic about that.
What were the field kitchens like? How did they work?
They were determined as a limber, one associated with gun carriage wheels. These containers or field kitchens were on these wheels, you see, and they were ignited by whatever fuel they could scrounge. That was the main grumble about the Belgian farmers or the French farmers, that they had a lot of their fencing and doors off the dwellings were stolen by our cooks and made for fuel.
What on the whole, did you get enough to eat?
No, there wasn't enough to eat, but there'd always be sufficient that you weren't actually starving, as it were. It's enough to tide you over.
Yeah, and what was the overall quality of the food you got?
I would say it was fair, to use the word fair, yes. In other words, if we had... confectionery came up to us and we were non-smokers, that was actually as if we were transported suddenly from the Western Front back home. And I remember a case, I actually had Toblerone chocolate in the front line position come up in the rations, which is now obtainable today, identical to it.
Smashing.
Yeah.
When you were in the front line, what were the facilities for washing and shaving?
Facilities as regards ablution in the front line are non-existent, absolutely non-existent. You could not hope to wash or do anything other than do natural cause in the latrines at the back of the trenches.
So for the days you were in the front line, you just wouldn't wash or shave?
No, you could not, no. Didn't expect to.
What about out of the line? Were there facilities for washing and bathing out of the line?
If you were right back at rest, that was the term, right back at rest, say somewhere in the 10 or 15 miles from the line, you'd be taken to special erected places for washing. And they were formed in a form of overhead sprays or showers. And you stand under these pipes with holes made in them, and there'd be some apparatus where the water, hot water, would be showered onto you. Very crude, but that's what they were. If my memory serves me rightly, they were formed.
Right. Now, what about your clothes? Was there any opportunity for washing or replacing your clothes?
Not your uniforms, but there were facilities for replacement of undervests, and they were put into what they called delousing machines.
What were they like?
They were like big oval containers or vessels, and your shirts and pants were put into these things, and they're supposed to kill the lice, but they, funny enough, they didn't.
Yeah.
In other words, they weren't successful, not in my opinion anyway. I found that when I had a so-called change of clothing or shirts, they were just as bad as when the ones would be taken off. Mm. So they weren't successful to my opinion.
And at what times was it possible to have the change of clean underclothes?
The only I was in the on the Western Front about 6 months, and I can only remember two occasions when we had a complete change of underclothes. But uniform, no, that was the exact uniform that I went out with.
So you're saying that in 6 months on the Western Front, you wore the same, you only had two or three clean sets of underwear?
Yes.
This problem of your own personal cleanliness must have been a very sort of dispiriting thing.
It was a condition of war which seemed to be accepted, and it became routine that you went through this process of delousing.
Yes, about this delousing, you mentioned that there were various delousing contraptions. What were they?
Contraptions? Hmm. Only these delousing vehicles whereby you were given so-called clean...
These fumigators, they were the...
That's it, fumigators. That was a word I was trying to think. Fumigators. Now, these a change of underclothes are supposed to be fumigated, you see. Well, you think you can have a shirt and underpants, etc., etc., quite devoid of being contaminated, but they were just as bad. So the reason for it, I don't know.
I've talked to
a lot... But that only happened... Mm. I only had two complete... changes of fumigated underclothes in the space of 6 months.
I've talked to a lot of people about lice, and I've always got the impression that this was really one of the most irritating aspects of serving in the trenches.
Yeah.
What was it actually like?
Well, it was a kind of a torture, inasmuch as it all was you, you see. And they manifest themselves when you were on the march. When the body got hot, you see, perspiration, I suppose the salt in the perspiration, would attract these things, and the eggs would hatch out, as it were, and they multiplied. It never seemed to be free of the lice. All the time one was in the on the Western Front.
Did they tend to congregate, as it were, in particular parts of your body?
Mostly around the waist, in my particular experience, in the waistline.
Now, everyone tried to get rid of the lice, usually unsuccessfully.
Yeah.
What sort of methods did you use, apart from the fumigator?
Well, if one was in a frontline position, that would be part of one of the exercises during the daytime, to go through your garments, either by a rather obnoxious method of squeezing them, or with a candle. And then suddenly it occurred to me. Then chaps used to write home for a special kind of an ointment. We used to rub into the seams of your tunics. But I never found it successful anyway. Whether they were being exploited, our parents or not, I don't know.
Was there any successful way of dealing with the lice?
None at all, no. They were the enemy, unconquerable.
Now, another very common problem was trench feet.
Yes.
Did you have much of this in your unit?
Only one particular occasion when we were took over a German trench, which was flooded, and we one particular night we had our feet in the water, and next day we were told to get back as best we could to a back area and change our socks. But I never experienced trench feet as such.
Okay, fine.
I think it only occurred in the winter time.
Were rats much of a problem for you?
I never saw a rat all the time I was there.
Is that a fact?
Yeah.
That's remarkable. You're the first person who's ever said that.
Yeah. All the books I've read about the war, they all accentuate about the rats.
Yes.
I touch on it in my notes. When I was in Ypres, in the ramparts, naturally inhabitants had to vacate their houses, left the domestic animals behind, or took them with them. But the cats remained. And the cats became reverted to the wild animal. They became so wild you couldn't get near them. And they had their young, and they were brought up just the same in a savage state. And I think probably they kept the rats down. I never saw a rat all the time over there.
That's very interesting.
When I was too night time, involved in my sleep, I don't know, but I never saw a rat.
What were the arrangements in the trenches for lavatories?
There was always latrines built at the back of the trenches where one could go to. That was in our British trenches, in any case. That was one of the first things they made.
But would circumstances arise where it would be impossible, perhaps owing to a bombardment or something, to go back to a latrine?
Oh, yes, yes. Yes.
How would you deal with
your
natural needs?
Well, then one would take a private corner and do nature's call into a tin and throw it over the top.
I see.
So one would always carry some newspaper with them. That was something which one learned to carry with you. And also it was a good protector against cold wind at night, who put it up your tunic. I'd like you to make a note of that.
Were there any instructions or arrangements for keeping the trenches clean?
I don't think that we ever had any specific orders to keep your trench clean. None as much that you couldn't make any excretion in the trench if it was possible to do it outside it.
I was wondering whether any efforts were made to sort of disinfect them or drain them or anything like that.
There were instances where I'd seen pumps lying around. So obviously there had been some arrangements to pump water out, but I never saw these pumps in operation. I had seen them lying around the back of trenches where they'd try to pump water out of the trenches.
Now, I've been raising various questions about hygiene and health and sanitary problems.
Yes.
Were there any problems of that kind that you had in the trenches that I haven't mentioned that you'd like to tell me about?
I can't remember that there was any specific arrangements whereby you had instructions to do this or do that to keep yourself free from a disease or being affected by anything which would affect one's health in the trench. Mm.
You had some experiences of medical services from a couple of occasions when you became unwell yourself. Tell me first about your experiences of in the forward casualty station.
Perhaps I'd better go back to my first experience of having the flu.
Well, what I wanted to know about the forward casualty stations is actually how they were set up and what kind of services they could provide.
Well, if a man was wounded in a forward position, and it would happen during daytime, you could not get him down. What would be done would be treated by a stretcher bearer. There was a stretcher bearer, two stretcher bearers to each platoon, and it would be his duty to tend to the wounded in a forward position until such times when it got dark, you get him down to company headquarters, from company headquarters to battalion.
Yeah. Talk about your own experience rather than sort of other people. Yeah. I mean, you went to a casualty, forward casualty station. What was it like? How was it organised?
Well, in my particular, my particular experience of